24 with Johnny Ward and Dan McDonald. Today's guests will be coming on individually. The old days of us all being together in a lovely studio and having coffees afterwards and getting great stories off the record, even better stories than we get in the podcast. They're over for the time being. We have Darragh O'Connor and Gary Cronin on Zoom later on the show. Thanks to our sponsors, Lottoland, where you'll find all the odds and special bets for the rest of the SSC Airtricity Premier Division season. Check out lottoland.ie/sportsbook. Make sure to stay tuned as we'll be giving out some of their LOI specials throughout the show. And you can find us on Podcast Republic, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, iTunes, at LOI Weekly on Twitter, in association with Air Sports and independent.ie. Dan, first things
Johnny,
first.
Johnny, first things first. Why are you putting that information out there, man? I mean, we off the record sources, I mean, who knows? We get sources, we get stories from all sorts of places. Now you're putting it out there. People listening to this are thinking now.
It's over, Dan. Nobody meets for coffees anymore anyway.
But like, you know, all those off-the-record discussions were off-the-record. The whole point of off-the-record is that you don't disclose it afterwards.
Yeah, but I'm not disclosing it, tracing back
stories to shows and guests and all this. I mean,
come on.
I read a journalist once include the line, what was it, on the record. And all, like, the phrasing of off the record is obviously it's a complex one, Johnny. Anyway, let's move along to the show.
Keep this secret better than I did and all that. But,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. You're not the most... as off the record goes, discretion, like, you know, I don't know.
Anyway, I'll give you a bit of kudos there. I was watching Virgin Media last night on the whole Delaney thing, and you were popping up there and regularly with your old stories about the Vantage Club, which seemed a long time ago. And as a journalist, that was an interesting one for you, because I remember you were like, geez, this could be massive, and it just wasn't. I was like, well, years and years later, actually, yeah, this all unraveled.
But, well,
The story goes on.
The problem with that is, like, unfortunately, and like, yeah, you did think that stuff was very significant at the time, and you had some big information at the time, which was 100% correct. I never received one legal letter having printed the exact sales, and not the exact sales, but pretty much the accurate sales figures and where it was. And I remember there was a public statement at the time saying the story was rubbish, but no legal letters, and the story, of course, was true. But it's very hard to. I suppose, like, if something is a long way in the distance, it's like if you owe someone money. Like, you know, if you owe someone, you know, I don't know, whatever, take an arbitrary figure, take a more human figure, you know, you owe someone a grand and say, I'll pay you back in a while, and they don't think you're going to be able to do it. I mean, at the time, you can still say you're going to be able to do it, you know.
But you're
sort of saying the FAI are going to be screwed in 2020, or if not before. But it's 2010 and 2011, and it's very easy for them to say, well, no, we'll be absolutely fine by then. And people believed it, really. Or, you know, they believed that the people who got them into the mess were the people who could maybe also get them out of it too. Or maybe they just didn't believe that it was that big of a problem at all. And even around that time as well, to be fair, I remember doing stuff around the Vantage Club situation, and there would have been other newspapers who would have responded to that story with comments from Eddie Murray, saying that this, of course, was rubbish.
Yeah.
And as years later, we know that Eddie Murray was the treasurer. I mean, it was good he was talking on the record to people at the time, but I don't know. There was a willingness to quash stuff with them too. But anyway, we're going off on a bit of a tangent here.
I was watching it with the Cork Dundalk game on in the background, and this game was still, as I think that so Tommy Martin and Mark Tye, they started, I think, at around 9 o'clock. So this game was still in the balance, and it was really weird watching this game last night, Dan, reflecting on, I was reflecting on where these clubs have been to where they are now. And obviously Dundalk are in the Europa League, and, you know, things are generally grand, but the demise of Cork. And I felt so sorry for them in many ways, because I thought they really gave it their all last night. And as often happens, they conceded a second goal straight away, but it's just looking very, very bleak for them at the moment.
Yeah, I think, first of all, to say that things are generally grand at Dundalk, I mean, by scale, of course it is. I mean, we are in a week where the chairman of the club has attacked, the IRFU has attacked Shamrock Rovers Stadium, which, you know, or South Dublin County Council Stadium, whatever you want to phrase it, which has saved them at times in recent years, and has basically, you know, the owners have gone on a run about trying to play games in Windsor Park, which, as far as I know, was a surprise to many people at the club day to day. So, like, the Dock are more successful, they have more money. But it
Sorry,
remains.
I should clarify that they're likely to get into Europe next season, and they're in the Europa League group stage.
No, no,
so
of course,
pitch, things are okay.
In terms of, like, you know, the Dundalk Cork rivalry, and you would still rather be in Dundalk now and in their situation and preparing for six Europa League group games. But there is no measure. Like, the dog is so wacky at the moment that it couldn't possibly be used. Like, generally, grand just is not a sentence that could be used about the dog at the moment. Even when things are, it's like batshit grand, you know, like, you know, batshit okay. So, but that's by the by. Yeah, I find the Cork situation sad. I do. I really do. I really enjoy going to Turner's Cross. Like, I mean, I really like. It's definitely a club that, I mean, I'm sure at times, probably in the midst of the Dundalk-Cork rivalry, we probably would have taken a fair bit of feedback from Cork, and not necessarily always positive. But the fact is that it's a club that is, that has that size of fan base, that, like, it does have a, they're just good, like, they are relevant, you know, like, they're, they're, what's going on there, like, there are a lot of people invested in it. Like, in, one of the reasons I love going to Cork is that, you know, you have the local, you can pick up the local papers or listen to the radio or whatever, and like, the club is a part of the discussion in a pretty big place. So that's not the club you want to be going down. And like, they're certainly look like they might be headed that way. Now, if we are at a stage where Cork are approaching, and it's a joke, but it's sort of like, it's reflected by history that, like, you know, they go through an era where they need to press reset every so often. You know, every 4, 5, 6, 7 years, there's another chapter in their existence, which involves the other one sort of moving on. That, like, I mean, we don't know what the football is going to be like next year in any sense. I mean, there may not be a possibility of a full house in Turner's Cross in any scenario next year. And if there is a year where you're going to go down and come back up, maybe 2021 isn't the worst year to be out of the Premier Division, because it might allow you to run slightly more manageable overheads, manageable sort of, you know, costs. But if you can still have a team that's good enough to be promoted, you're not necessarily missing out on all this income you could have won, you know. But that's sort of like stretching for a positive as much as you can.
In 2 weeks today, they're going to vote on the potential sort of Preston thing, which is a really remarkable development as well. For, and I, you know, I'm just getting the feeling off Twitter that Cork fans that have mixed kind of views on this.
They do, and I'm broadly aware of it, but I feel like I need to read more and speak to more people about it to fully talk about it. I mean, unless, the fact is, if you're on about selling the club for a euro and basically it's about inheriting debt, you know, or inheriting liabilities, or whatever way you want to phrase it, then obviously things are bad.
Like, so much potential there to be buying that club and just taking over the debt, you know what I mean?
And it pains me to say it. Like, it pains me to say that the Forest model hasn't worked, you know, because that's like,
abandoning communism.
It brought the club back, you know, it brought the club to a double. You forget it in the Tom Collin era and the end of it, how low things were. It was one of the most heartwarming stories of, like, Irish sport in some respects in the last decade, that they managed to come back. And you, the start of the Caulfield era, like 6,000-7,000 people at games that aren't even that big, you know, like not necessarily like a premium match. So, like, there was, you know, obviously within the system, like, was it that the system didn't work, or it was more so that it was the operation of the system that didn't work, and that within that there was weaknesses exposed? Was there too much democracy that they recycled the board so often that they lost people that they shouldn't need to lose? And, you know, is the broader debate being that if you are in a cruel capitalist world, that you for all that you might have a model with fan investment and engagement, that you might still, unless you are in a very privileged position, you may still always need that benefactor presence there. Like, I mean, Rovers have something now, but they have Dermot Desmond there, you know. Like, now Bowes, I suppose, are trying to tackle it to some degree with, you know, as a sort of a member run club. And
Matt Doherty.
Yeah, but it does help, of course. Yeah, when you can get an investment, and what they have is, I don't know. I mean, Bowes are going great. Really, but 4 or 5 years ago, Cork were probably a model club too. I mean, they were both involved in like more than a club programs, and like they were flagship clubs. And obviously, Bowes are still going to face challenges if they go to Talca for a couple of years, et cetera, et cetera. But they do seem to be on a very stable footing. I guess what I'm just saying is that maybe it was the operation of the scheme that they had, the system that they had, rather than necessarily the system itself being the problem. And it does seem that some very, very bad decisions were made and were allowed to be made. And they've made mistakes in recent times too, as well, let's be honest. So it's very, very unfortunate. Like, I just think, you know, a Premier Division without Cork in it is not a good thing.
Let's stay with Cork and talk to Darragh O'Connor, who left the club in very abrupt circumstances recently.
We're now joined by former UCD and, as it is, former Cork City player Darragh O'Connor, who obviously left the club pretty abruptly in the last week or so, after which Cork played a couple of games, losing at Bowes and losing to Dundalk last night despite a spirited performance. Darragh, strange times for you, I guess. You know, it's coming to the end of the season and you're no longer involved.
Yeah, turbulent enough, week or two, you could say. Kind of disappointing more so than anything, really, after the 18 months I had in Cork. I didn't really want it to end like that. But I suppose in football, you can't really be surprised at anything that happens. Like, that being said, I'm still watching the boys. I'm still in touch with them. I was watching the game last night. I felt like I was part of the team that lost. Like, when you're with a group of lads for so long, you still feel part of it. Like, so it's a weird one. It's definitely a weird one.
What happened?
To put it abruptly, like, obviously it's kind of common knowledge, I got taken off, myself and Dylan McGlaid, after half an hour against St. Pat's. And rightly or wrongly, I was taken off. I'm not going to beat around the bush. Like, I was fairly surprised. I wasn't necessarily having a stinker. I wasn't having the worst game of my life. Now, was I amazing? No, I wasn't. Like, I thought I was no better, no worse than anyone else on the pitch. Nearly felt like a scapegoat. Like, a just look, the manager wants to make a reaction with 2-0 down, take off the two wingers. That's the way it looked to me. And I rang the people that I trust the most. I rang my dad, rang my agent, rang a few of my mates that watched the game, and they kind of said the same thing. Like, we were surprised. Like, we didn't think you were that bad. Like, and they were kind of sugarcoating it for a bit. Like, that was that. I didn't say anything. The mood was as low as I've probably ever seen it after that game, because after the result we got against Hearts, we kind of thought we could get something. But look, I did say I wouldn't press Fenn on it after the game. It wasn't the right time and the right ways about doing these things. Like, so I said I'd wait till Monday morning. And we went in, we were training, we did the warm-up, the possession drill, and then we went straight into an 11v11 shape. And he called out two teams and he said, anyone that's not in shape, go inside, you're not needed. I was there kind of looking around and looked at myself, and I was the only one not in shape. So I was like, what's going on here? So I went inside, sat down for a bit, did a gym session, and then Joe Gamble said, Darragh, look, Gaffer wants to have a word with you if you go up to the office. And I was kind of rattled at this stage, like, because I'd never really not trained before. Like, I hadn't seen that done before. But look, he sat me down and was like, Darragh, there's 5 games to go, and I'm going to be completely honest with you, you're not going to feature at all, really. So in my eyes, you're kind of free to go, do whatever you want. And I was kind of taken aback, because we actually got on fairly well. Like, we were, as far as personal relations go with managers, it was probably up there with the best I had, like, off the pitch. Like, I'd always be doing favours for him. I'd be doing this, I'd be doing that. Like, we just got along really well. So there was no big argument in there. Like, he was just, look, there, I don't think you're up for this, in his eyes anyway. Which I disagreed with, and I kind of pleaded my case. Look, there's 5 games. Surely I can feature in some capacity. Like, I said, no, not a chance. And that was that. Like, I was kind of fighting a losing battle from there. So I said, what's where do we go from here? And he's like, you can go down to the secretary, and that's that. You're free to do what you want. So I was kind of taken aback. Like, it was a strange one. Like, and signed my release forms, and that was that. Like, it was, I didn't expect to go up in Monday morning to training and not go back again, but happened very quickly.
So, like, take us back to the Pats game then. Like, it stood at, you know, at half time, say you've already been substituted. Like, I mean, is there any communication to you, like, when you know, when you come off the pitch or at half time, or anyone to say, well, listen, this?
No, I think like people that know me, I'm not really an angry guy. Like it takes a lot to get me angry. And at half time, I could see nobody wanted to say anything to me or to Dylan. Dylan was furious as well, by the way. It wasn't just me in this boat. I could just see people kind of giving me eyeballs, being like, what's going on here? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, nobody wants to say anything, but eyes can tell a lot, like, what way of feeling, like, between different members of staff or off the field staff. Everyone's kind of looking at me, going, like, what's going on there? Did you do something? Did you say something? Like, there wasn't much rationale to it. In my eyes, I'm not the manager. I don't make these calls, but I didn't feel like I should have been taken off. But look, ultimately, I was, and McGlade was, and I do think it was to get a reaction, because I watched the game back and myself or Dylan weren't atrociously worse or better than anyone else on the pitch.
Because I am conscious Neil Fenn's not here, right? So obviously he can't sort of defend himself as such if he's not here. Like, I mean, in the previous weeks, had there been any sort of discussion or chat or, you know, we need more from you or some general discussion or conversation that in any way could... you look back now and go, well, maybe that was linked to this in some way or form.
I've tried patching things together to get to the extreme that we were. Like, obviously, there was a 2-3-4 week period where I wasn't in the team, and I knew why I wasn't in the team. I was given a chance in whatever game, and I didn't play particularly well in that game. I bided my time 2-3 weeks in, didn't kick up a fuss. Generally, I didn't go barging down his door, none of this, and. Eventually, then we did. I think it was when Dundalk were playing. Whatever, we were meant to play Dundalk on the Sunday, and basically our game got called off because they qualified or whatnot. So we played in an in-house 11v11, basically the normal starting 11 against the subs. And I went out. I was playing with the so-called subs team. Had a really good game. Scored. I think we actually won the game as well. And then I was like, okay, I kind of have a bit of leverage now to go in and see what's the story. Could I feature or whatnot? I spoke to him very casually, just out in the training ground, even been like, look, will that do anything to kind of swing me into the team at some stage? And he was like, yeah, I thought you did really well, and I'm happy out for you. So I might give you a run out against Harps and make sure you take your chance. Went up to Harps, set up the goal, played well, kept my starting place, which to me was step one into playing for every game for the rest of the season. But I only got another 30 minutes, and that was that. Honest to God, people have been saying, surely you had some falling out. Surely there was this, there was that, there was a personal disagreement, there was a fight, or you hit him, or he did. So I've heard everything in the books. And honest to God, there wasn't one thing that sparked it. And to this day, I still stand. If I met him tomorrow morning for a coffee, I reckon we could chat for an hour. Like, there was no massive disagreement. It was just purely a professional thing. Look, you're not going to feature. I'm not going to waste your time. Go off and do something if you want.
As Dan said, obviously Neil's not here, but was this symptomatic of somebody who was kind of, if not losing the plot, losing control of a situation that was probably slightly unraveling, that when you didn't beat Harps and obviously the Pats game was poor, maybe he just wasn't to do with you and Dylan, it was just more to do with what was going on in his head maybe?
Yeah, I don't want to throw him under the bus, and that's not that he was unraveling, but he definitely was under pressure. We all knew that, to an extent. It's a results game business. We knew we were under pressure and we knew he was under pressure. We, as a player, don't want to get relegated. We don't want to have that big oar on our CV for the rest of our career. And neither did he. And just every week progressing, it just felt we were getting closer and closer to that. No matter what we did, we tried everything. We tried nice fun training sessions. We tried hard grueling sessions. We tried running sessions with no ball for the day. We tried everything. And it just, nothing seemed to actually work for us on the pitch. We train really well, we're buzzing going into a game, and then we'd be 2-0 down after 10 minutes. It happened nearly every second week. So he was gradually getting more and more stressed out, which happens, do you know what I mean? My dad's a manager, and pharmaceutical manager up in Dublin, and he says, he's like, things are going to go wrong. You kind of get out of tune of what you normally do, you start doing things you don't normally do. Now, whether he was saying that to kind of calm me down or not, I don't know, but you see it every week in England, the manager's doing things that they probably don't normally do because they know their job is on the line and they're trying to get a reaction. So I think there could be an element of that. As I said, I do get along really well, so I don't want to throw him under the bus, but I couldn't see any other rationale than, okay, maybe if I make it one big rash decision here, cut a player from the team, it might give everyone else a kick up the backside. Is that way of looking at it? If that's true or not, I don't know, because I got along really well with everyone in the team.
What was that like? Just going to ask you that. What was that like? It's a bit of a mishmash of a squad with veterans, with Irish lads would come from elsewhere, English lads would come in, loanees and so on.
Yeah. Do you know what? And I don't know how this is going to come across to people, but like it was genuinely one of the best teams I've ever had off the pitch. And I don't mean that in a socialising way, like going out, hitting the pubs and all that, because obviously none of that was even open, but like going for coffees, playing golf together, everything off the pitch, we were very united. Like there was no, I'd actually say we were more together this year on the pitch than we were last year. And last year's group of lads were together for years. So it was, I went down to the dressing room, pick up my stuff, and the whole players were in, all 20 lads were in there. And I just had to go, look, lad, sorry, I'm off here. And it was emotional. It was like leaving 6 year school after leaving your mates for 6 years. Like it was quite sad. Like hugs the whole lot. So if his idea was, look, if I give Dara the boot, it'll give everyone a kick up the backside. It definitely didn't work in my eyes because I don't think any of the players were too excited. And then they were also thinking, geez, I could be next. Do you know what I mean? Like it kind of rattled them in the wrong way, I think. Even if that's not what he meant to do, I think that's the way it came across anyway. And for me, the most frustrating thing is the next day he was gone.
And you couldn't come back. Like you said there, you got on quite well with him personally. You did a few favors from him. I'm now imagining you doing a shopping for him or something like that. Like, you mean,
No, just clarify this. Yes. No, I was more of like a personal chauffeur. So any lads that came over from England, I would have collected them from the airport. Trialists, I would have done that. I knew the area. I got along with them well in the first place. Like, even when Kit Elliott, the striker that came over on loan, like he had to get back to Dublin instantly. He had a flight that he had to make. I gave him this spin up to Dublin. Like, I just got along. I got along with all the players and I got along with him really well. So it was never...
Good young player, isn't he?
Pardon?
Sorry, Johnny, let's keep going with that. Sorry, you got on quite well with him, so it was a surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and as I say, the meeting itself, it was short and sharp. It was 4 or 5 minutes tops. There was no screaming, there was no argy-bargy, there was no like aggressiveness or anything. He was just, look, Dara, I'm going to be blatantly honest with you here. You're not, in my eyes, you're never going to play for me again. And it was black and white as that. And I said, to his eyes, is there anything I can do to make sure that doesn't happen? Surely I'd feature in some capacity. He's sober for 1-0 down, half an hour to go. Do you think I can give you anything? And he looked me dead straight in the eye and said, no.
There was no single moment in the Pats game where you threw in the towel or didn't chase back?
No, if anything, I watched the game back. I put in a few tackles. I didn't lose the ball. Like, I without throwing my teammates under the bus, there was certainly lads that had a lot worse games than I did. And they said that to me themselves. They were like, when I seen the two lads warm up, because we brought on two subs, they were like, I thought I was coming off. And that kind of gave me that reassurance. Now, whether they're saying that to make me feel better, they could have been. But they weren't massively wrong. Like, I think when the substitution board went up and my number came on, everyone's kind of looked around and was like, what's going on here? And after the game, two or three of the Pats lads I know would have sent me a text being like, I didn't think that was the right call. Like, I thought you were actually doing all right.
That's nice as well, to be fair.
Yeah.
It was. Absolutely. Yeah. It was. Do you know those kind of times in life where you're like, you're so disoriented of what's after happening, you can't really think straight. Like, so to get that reassurance of a few of the boys on the team and off the Pats team that I didn't actually have the biggest stink in the world, it kind of cheered me up a bit. Like,
so Darragh, like, you actually ended up, you're back in Wicklow now, but you actually were down in Cork for a while more after, because you lived with a couple of the lads, so you were actually basically around them as such.
I lived with four of the English lads on Kev O'Connor. So Henry, Joseph, Deshaun, Henry, Joseph, Deshaun and Kev and myself were all in the house. We got all along brilliantly. Like, but obviously I left on the Monday and they had the game on Friday against Bowes. I was in the house all during the week. It's a strange enough dynamic. Like, they were getting up to go to training and I was there going to local park for a run, and we'd come back. We'd still have our afternoon coffee. We'd be making dinner together, but they'd be preparing for Bowes, and then I was packing up my stuff. My family came down and helped me move up. So it was strange. Like, it was definitely a different dynamic. Like, than it was normally before, like, which is understandable. I didn't want to be a hindrance to them either, like, because whether we get along as best mates or not, like, I'm still kind of moping around the place a bit, like.
Yeah, of course, it's only natural, and it's just frustrating that your papers were done, so you couldn't.
Part of me was kind of like, okay, well, because it was Monday, and this is the other thing. Well, I don't think it was in his eyes to plan this, but it was the last day of the window. So whether deep down he was thinking he was doing me a favour, making me a free agent, I don't know. I didn't even quiz him on that. But like, if he did, it could potentially work out all right. Like, I'll get myself a club. now in the next week or two, and I'll be able to play for the rest of the year. Like, do you know what I mean? Get 10, 15 games, given the year that's happened, I'd bite my hand off for that now. But I don't think that was a thought process. Like, it just was a coincidence. It happened to be the last day of the deadline at around 1 o'clock, went straight down to the secretary, and I think the forms went through down at 3 before the deadline at 5. So now, I did text the secretary the next day when the gaffer got sacked. I was like, is there any chance of a U-turn? Like, did they actually go through? And he was like, they did, because no matter what way you look at it, like, there are going to be people that think I just jump ship, like, and hopped out of a relegation battle. I can't change those people's mind. Like, that's just not the way it is. Like,
it's also the fact that you could have made a difference in the games that are left, and you know, it's still in the balance. Yeah.
It's not as if we're blessed with squad options. Like, do you know what I mean? We have a limited enough squad. We brought up a lot of lads from the 19s. Like, I'm not the most experienced person, but I have 2-3 senior seasons under my belt. I've won a league with UCD. I did feel like I had a decent bit to offer, whether I was starting every game or coming on off the bench. Like, I thought it'd be useful in some capacity. And it was heartwarming. Like, when I did put up my so-called goodbye post, like, the message I got from the Cork fans were really touching and positive. It kind of did reassure me that, okay, I didn't have the worst time of my life in Cork. Like, I actually did do something to some fans. They actually rate me a bit, like,
How will they do under Colin Healy now, do you think?
They'll listen to him, they'll respect him, they'll be scared of him. So at this stage of the season, that's kind of, you just need to be well organized. All tactics go out the window at this age of the season. It's literally, it's very cliche, but it's do or die kind of time for them, really, like, isn't it? Like, if they lose to Waterford, I think they're gone. Like, and they tell that themselves. Last night was a bit of a hit. It was a free hit. Like, nobody expected anything against Dundalk at home.
They were far from disgraced as well, in fairness.
And, like, Dundalk, it sounds very ironic, but they're in the Europa League group stages, but they're not to be as feared as they were 2 years ago, if that makes sense. I don't know how that's the mentality at the moment, but they probably tell you themselves they're probably not the same outfit this year. Consistency-wise in the league, I know they've had a turbulent time, but some of the lads would have thought that we could get a result against them. We beat them last year, 1-0 at home, exactly the same time of the year, like, towards the end of middle of October. I don't know if you watched the game or not, but up until 70 minutes, I thought we could nick a point, do something. Moral of our story, we concede one, we concede another one, then 2 minutes later, and game over. So, yeah. I think it's just a mentality thing. Once we go 1-0 down, it's very hard for ourselves to convince ourselves, right, we can go on and win this game. I don't think since I came to the club 2 years ago, we've ever been 1-0 down, come back and we won again. That's what horrendous that, like.
Just before you go, Dara, I mean, two things. I mean, like, over the 2 years, you came to a club that was the top of the game, really. Like, you thought you were going to probably challenge for leagues and stuff like that. It's very hard to summarise it briefly, but, like, what's your take on how it's come from there to here?
It's just been so turbulent. Like, I don't think there's ever been a 4-week period where things have just consistently went well without some form of hiccup on or off the pitch. Like, from a personal point of view and a collective point of view, like, to sum it up very, very quickly, like, Caulfield came in, started, I was doing really well, dislocated my shoulder, came back fit, Caulfield was gone, Cotts came in. Cotts was trying to steady the ship, clear the wage bill. We had around 28 players all on good money and around 7 of them standing in the stand. Like, there was players coming and going every second day. I think in total, I lived with over 15 people since I went to Cork, like, across the different houses. Like, it was just a merry-go-round of sometimes, like, people are coming in and saying, all right, lads, how's it going? And then somebody else will be gone then the next day. Like, the turnover of players from, like, if you think of Cork in 2017, they had a core squad, basically the same starting 11 more or less all the time. You could nearly list it off by heart at this age, the spine of the team. And once they left, I don't think they were just ever replaced character-wise and ability-wise. Like, I think we just stocked up on okay players rather than pushing out the boat for, like, top quality players and then building around them. I don't think that was ever done. And to be fair, it's no one's individual fault, like, because Cotts knew probably only had the gig for 2-3 months. Like, he knew he couldn't fully rebuild the squad. Fenn came in, he apparently didn't have a decent budget. He had to kind of pluck players from England. It was never, I don't think anyone fully had the opportunity to just build a team and work with it. Like, we didn't play the same starting 11 once this year. We changed formation 4 or 5 times. These things, each week you kind of, okay, well, this might work, this might work. And just ultimately just never worked.
You got to have sympathy for him in the sense of the season being so abridged that it was the last thing Cork needed as well.
Yeah, like I read some stat on Twitter there that like Fenn was effectively sacked after 13 games. Like if it was a 36-game season, would he have been sacked after 13 games? Probably not. The board, I can see the rationale. If there's 5 games to go, Cork in the first division would be a disaster for the city. Like, okay, we've tried everything. Let's see the so-called bounce reaction. Nearly every team that gets a new manager gets some form of reaction. Like, it's common sense. 2 games in and that reaction is yet to come, but there were signs of it last night. Like, so I hope for their sake now that they kick on. Like, Waterford at home is a winnable game. If they don't, I think they're gone.
So what's next for you, Dara? I mean, the fact that you did leave at the time that you did leave means that you can go to another jurisdiction and play. So are you sort of weighing up your options a bit?
Yeah. As I said, I was blessed that I actually was able to become a free agent there and then on the Monday. So I took just a few days off just to just reset, go home, relax. I probably haven't had a full break in a long time. I just put the feet up and just take my eye off football for a few days. But I've kind of been on the phone now the last day or two, just kind of weighing up things. I've a few offers maybe up north and across the water in England. So ultimately, at this stage of my career, I just want a stable period where I'll play more or less week in, week out, and just kind of just get some goals, assists under my name, get the career rolling again, because it's been a very stop-start 2 years. Mm. So you'll probably either see me up north or across in England or Scotland in the next maybe week or two, hopefully if things go to plan.
That's maybe great. You can rip it up over in England and all this will be for the better.
That's the thing. Like, I mean, one manager doesn't rate you, the next manager will rate you. You just kind of have to take it as it comes. I know in football, nothing is personal. And look, even if he's listening to this, I'm sure he won't disagree with anything I've said. Like, you know what I mean? It came out of his mouth and he'd back it up if I met him tomorrow. Like, it's just, it's nothing ever personal. It's a professional opinion. So we move on and there's no hard feelings.
Listen, I hope it works out for you. I mean, I don't know. Do you find yourself looking at, I don't know, the news updates and pandemic and lockdowns? Does that come into your thinking about like moving at the moment? Like even going to the country or something like that? Like,
it's not an ideal time to be a free agent. Well, it isn't. It isn't, I suppose. Number one, there's no transfer fee. But second of all, a lot of clubs are either strung out in their budget, they've already used it, and you're left then with pittance, or else it's the other way around, and they're crying out for players because they haven't been able to get anyone in. But moving, I've no problem moving. I'd play anywhere in the world. But obviously, if you want to be in the kind of the so-called window in this area, you need to be either in Ireland, Northern Ireland, England, or Scotland. Like, that's the reality of it. Like, do you know what I mean? I think Northern Ireland are going into lockdown. England are close to going into lockdown. But I think football in the broad sense will carry on in some capacity. I don't think fans will be let in, but I think they'll definitely keep it going for entertainment purposes and sanity purposes more so than anything.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks a million for coming on. You've been really honest, and obviously it's a difficult time for you. You know, tough times in Cork, tough times for you in terms of how it happened, but we really appreciate you coming on.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me, lads.
Don't forget to visit lottoland.ie/sportsbook, where you'll find all the odds and weekly special bets for the Premier Division. This week, they're boosting a League of Ireland home treble of Shamrock Rovers, Dundalk and Cork, boosted from 8.8 to 11. That's 10-1 to avail this offer. Go to the price booster section at www.lottoland.ie/sportsbook. Which rather reminds me of the old GAA PRO who was asked to take down the address from a journalist mate of mine, and he said, "I'll give you the address now. It's www." And the GAA PRO goes, sorry, how many W's again?" Simpler times.
Yeah, thanks to Dara. Dan made an important point there. Neil Finn isn't in studio or isn't talking to us to give obviously his version of events. And, you know, we obviously have to just reflect on Dara, which was fairly harrowing stuff, Dan. You know, you're reflecting on if you lost your job in that sort of a manner and it wasn't in remotely in the public eye, it'd be hard to take. But it must have been quite difficult for Dara. And now, you know, Neil Finn is gone, but so is he, and Cork City are in a battle.
Yeah, no, like Dara articulated his points very well there, to be fair. You know, you have people talking about their departure from a club, and it can be laced with bitterness or barbs or whatever. I don't think it was really like that. You know, I think, you know, there's a degree of understanding there that like a manager is under pressure and they do things rashly, they lose maybe a sense of perspective. Maybe he was looking for a reaction. Who knows? It is a strange one, the Fenn one, because basically it hasn't worked out. Let's be honest. It just hasn't worked out at all. There's no way of sugarcoating it, really. It just didn't work. And that's what happens sometimes. But there actually seems that even sort of the people say at board level and stuff, like, they still seem to reasonably, you know, sort of quite like him, you know, that there's actually just a sadness that it didn't work out.
Well, you're talking about marriages.
Rather than
well,
going, this, you know, where's yeah, that sort of pratt gone now? You know what I mean?
You're talking about margins. If they beat Finn Harps, that kind of does change the season. They're 1-0 up with whatever was 10 minutes left, and they didn't then. And then the Pats game happened.
Yeah, but they weren't very good in the Pats game. And the fact is, like, at several times this season, they have been routinely hammered, you know, like putting out a team that really knows its job. Like, I think you're struggling to have too many examples of that. You know, I don't think it's a case that, well, if they had a bounce of the ball here and there, he needed a bit more luck. I don't think that's the case.
If they beat Finn Harps, and they in many respects they were the better team, and they have some good players there at the moment, they're ahead of Harps and they kind of control their destiny. It's still fine margins, Dan. And as he said, what are we talking? 13 games into the season or whatever it is.
No, but there's still 9 points from those games. You know, it's tough. Of course, it's tough, right? But they recruited a lot of players from the UK. They brought them in. Now, budgetary needs, obviously, you know, the budgetary needs must in some respects, but, and it's a bit hit and miss, I guess. And did a piece at the start of the season about going to the UK or going outside the league. Like, you, for every hit, you will have a miss, but they've had a lot of misses, you know. And I see Rayon Dillon, one of the players who was there, has been sort of tweeting some stuff suggesting he wasn't actually that enamoured with Fenn and stuff. And I don't know. I don't know if there was a real. I don't know if there was a real method to the recruitment, really. And you do see, you can see elsewhere, other managers with tight resources managing to put out a team that's a lot more has a lot more personality and identity. Yeah, but Harps have actually, in fairness, probably pushed the boat out a bit this year in terms of recruitment. To be completely fair about it, But maybe talk about John Sheridan going into Waterford, right? Where Waterford were chaotic. They had less training than everyone else. You know, they came back later than everyone else. Like they only had a couple of players on the bench for one of their first games back. But they always played with a personality and an identity.
Also, like, even Alan Reynolds as well. The team Waterford have put together, you know, watching them against Shell, should have won the game. They're still banged there for Europe or for finishing fourth. They've been a real credit to the players have been a credit to the players, managers that have brought them in. But fair play to them, like they've good players and they did recruit well. Yeah,
so I guess I'm saying they've done a better management job. Yeah. So like that's my point. So
this is staggering, Dan. That you can collapse from a situation where Cork were getting routinely into Europe, winning leagues, winning cups, and now are like so many problems, not only on the pitch but off it as well. In such a big city, and maybe taken over. I'm just like, how did this happen? So
it's a deflating one because they did everything you think they have everything there that you think they should do. You know, as in the sense that they have a good stadium, they have good crowds. And they qualify for Europe, 4 or 5 years in a row, which is like, that's meant to be the holy grail. That's meant to be stability. But obviously, I mean, at the end, they were budgeting for even higher crowds and they didn't necessarily have a plan for any scenario whereby what happens if we do have a bad season. And all of a sudden, the house of cards fell pretty quickly from that point. I mean, Dara spoke about it there. It certainly is the thing that's spoken about, and we spoke to John Caulfield about it, and I mean his answer, he didn't necessarily really engage with the answer about the big squad that they have, but that was certainly something that's come back from everyone, to number of players in the stand, the players, almost the dressing rooms weren't big enough, they didn't even have enough food of their food, like for the mental squad, for the squad that they had, whatever deal they had, that they were reaching around for a solution, just kept bringing in more players and more players and more players, and it got them into a hole from which they couldn't emerge. But of course, like,
where do you stand on that?
They also made mistakes in the last year as well. Of course, like Fenn was a mistake ultimately. You know, like they put a lot of They put a lot of stock in Fenn.
Can't really say that though, because he's gone after 13 games. It's too early. Like, you can't. Maybe he was a mistake. Maybe he wasn't. But just like, I don't see the point in having massive squads. I think if you look at what Bowes are doing this season, their first 11 has only deviated a little bit.
Bowes have a very big squad. That's actually the worst example you can pick.
Okay, well, say if the first 11 with young players coming through and promote your young players, keep the budget relatively sane, would be my approach. And I just don't see the point in having massive squads, and it can lead to a situation where ultimately you have 7 right backs, you overspend and you get relegated 2 seasons later.
No, Dundalk have a very big squad this year, of course, and they were planning for like a 50 game season, as Vinnie Parrott said, and then it ends up looking daft when you've a shorter season. And I get that. I think I take your point that you can have a big squad if the bulk of it is, or you know, the fringes of it is young lads on the way up.
Cork should have enough talent for that.
But yeah, and they were reaching. They were panicking. Like they were just panicking. They'd lost it. They'd lost the magic touch, and as a result, they were always looking for that player. It was almost like they were always looking for a Shawnee Maguire to raise them, or that sort of that player who turns out to be a hit, you know. But it's hard to bring players to the league who can have that sort of transformative effect. Like, you can bring in some very good players, and we've seen some good players come into the league, you know, with sort of interesting pedigrees and backgrounds. Think of like Adam Hamill at Derry, you know, and then you've guys like Figuera and, you know, sort of junior, and you make countless sort of examples of players who've come in from outside the league and done very well, but there isn't too many that have come in and sort of like lifted a club, you know, that that person has solved all of their problems. I mean, if you look at the teams that have had the most success in recent years, it's been a steady building process, and actually the standout outstanding players, like the really outstanding players in our league in terms of like dominance, when you talk about, say, think of Jack Byrne at the moment, you think of Towell, you think of Keith Fahey going back in time, although he didn't win a league with Pats, but they were actually Irish lads. They were players who should have been, you know, you think of like Fahey, where he went to, Shawnee Maguire, like they were players who were good enough to play, you know, at the level that they've got to eventually. And, you know, think of the case of Shawnee now, he's still a championship player, albeit maybe hasn't lit it up in that. But they were sort of young players on the way up, whereas obviously sometimes you go outside the league, it's a mixed bag. And in fairness, they were taking a lot of young players. I suppose there's a look like Kieran Sadler, excellent player, excellent signing, to be fair, albeit via Sligo. But they just, that last year or two, they were just, I don't know, like some of them were in and gone just as quickly. So
imagine the atmosphere if you visited Watford, if you did have a crowd on Saturday, because Watford, it's a massive game for them, but this is basically it for Cork. If they lose this game, they're toast, pretty much. They're in.
Dara said it. I mean, listen, he's speaking for himself, but he's obviously probably still in tune with what the mindset would be down there, you know, and you do watch. I mean, and like Colin Healy, for a number of years, you keep hearing how well respected Colin Healy is behind the scenes. He doesn't like doing the front of the camera stuff. Hasn't really done that many sort of interviews of any real description since he's come home, apart from one or two very good ones. But like, you know, he's not someone who courts it or seeks it, or people might necessarily know his voice that well.
Yeah, I heard the interview after the game, and it was a first for me, I have to say.
Yeah, so people. Know how well he regarded he is, and you almost don't want someone like that to be associated with a relegation, you know. It's like that sort of, you know, that legendary figure who comes in, this, you know, like Shearer at Newcastle or something, who's like, he's there when they go down.
Yeah, Watford and they've Sligo, and they, in fairness, they didn't play badly against Dundalk. They are showing a bit of spirit.
Yeah, like it's there was a shape to how they played. Now, in some respects, some people would say, well, yeah, but it's easier to have a structure if you just decide to defend like behind the ball for most of the game. And I do accept that point. You know, that's an easier thing to do than construct a plan to, say, press Dundalk and try and, you know, win the game that way. But so you can overreact to a team being solid and getting broken down eventually. But in saying that, bizarrely enough, there was a period after halftime in the game where it looked like they were trying to come out a bit. It was almost like they'd got the halftime level, they'd got through that, and then they were sort of able to break a bit more.
Spring the outbreak.
Morrissey was good, and McGlade had that chance. And you're thinking, God, is this... I think I was texting you a bit during the game, but I'm not sure if I said it to you. It was almost set up to be one of these games where they get ahead and they win it 1-0. It's like a cup tie. Now, Cork don't want to be playing Dundalk like a cup tie. They don't want to be playing like a lower division team against a bigger team. And like that's the sadness and where they've completely fallen to. So against Waterford at the weekend, like they can't... The plan that they had against the dog, it cannot work against Waterford to win. Like you have to go and be on the front foot a small bit more. And that's what's going to be very interesting about it. Like, you know, in what way can they have that solidity that they had for a large part of the game, but also, you know, get Dowling and McGlade and your more creative players to not have them also having to defend from the front as well as a sort of...
I think it could be when you see Darren Murphy coming on and how well he seemed to play, and just Waterford have good players, you know, Smith, Coote, obviously Tyreek Wilson, Murphy's come in. They've just good players, probably the best goalie in the league, arguably. And Cork will have to come out, so it'll be really interesting to see what happens. But the big story of the weekend is Rovers could win the league.
If Dundalk take points off Bowes on Friday,
won't be quite like Liverpool beating Blackburn, but Man United still losing at West Ham.
As a young
Johnny Ward watching
1995. Watching the pub. How old are you? 13. Yeah, son.
That explains a lot.
But you drive there as well.
I was infatuated with the Premier League. I think it might maybe the following season I started going to League of Ireland games.
Summer '95, Johnny. It was the sunniest summer of recent Irish history. Dundalk won the league that year. You were clearly in your Premier League bubble then, because the most exciting title race that year was at home, where you had three teams going for the league the last day of the season. Derry in Athlone, Dundalk at home to Galway, and then it was it Shells with the other team that could have won it against Pats, I think it was.
So memorable, you can't remember who the third team was.
Well, they were the minor players in the game.
Yeah.
But it was Athlone scored in the first minute against Derry City.
And was then, that Jim McLaughlin then?
It was Dermot Keely.
Keely was
the manager of Dundalk, and Felix Healy was the manager of Derry. And Donal Golden scored a stunning goal. I think the clip's still on YouTube. It's like because it was actually a really good Sunday Sport package that they actually did. Like they did from 0 to 90 minutes, so they went to each ground. You know, they went to each ground. But like I was at Dundalk that day. People might be aware of where I grew up, going to games, and I remember like bringing a radio, like bringing like a Walkman or something.
Ah.
And so after Athlone scored in the first minute, I sort of like maybe jumped up, and this cassette or Walkman or whatever I had, which being in 1995, it was probably the size of me. But it just jumped up and like smashed in pieces on the ground. I was like, "Well, there goes my update service for the rest of the game." But there was that whole tension. Derry missed a penalty. Stuart Gould later on. Actually, I think I'm trying to think of the Liam Coyle score for Derry. But there was a massive Derry crowd in Athlone, and they bottled it. And then the other team was. I'm pretty sure it was Shells against Pats. They dropped points, and then Dundalk sort of swept in to win, where actually there was pretty much no one at the game. Well, not no one at the game, but like I think there was like 1,500 people in the ground at the start of the match, and probably more than that, comfortably more than that, full time. It was a Sunday afternoon, it became clear. But like, that was when Dundalk were in the sort of the hangover from the glory years, and people were very complacent about
not dissimilar to where they've.
But anyway, start tangent.
But Dundalk, Bowes are qualified for Europe, and Rovers are playing Derry, who are kind of still in the mix for something or other. And Rovers will probably win. Dundalk playing Bowes at home, it could easily be Rovers' title.
Well, possibly it could be. Now Rovers are obviously going to have some issues on Friday. The Graham Burke is suspended. Jack Byrne won't be available. So it's going to be a sort of a diminished Rovers in the sense of, like, in fact, it'll be actually sort of interesting to watch them.
It'll be very interesting.
Because, like, you talk about having the two number 10s.
Dylan Watts suddenly, come in.
Suddenly having no number 10s. They have other players who can obviously play there. And you are right, Dylan Watts is very much one of them. So, in a way, like, it would be a triumph of the squad if they could do it without those lads. But I'm sure, in a way, I think... think they'd like to have. I think there would be something symbolic probably about Jack Byrne being on the pitch when the final whistle is blown.
Yeah, fair point, because he's been
so central to it. But he's obviously sort of had a very challenging week. But the overall picture is sort of it's a bit flat, but at least I think on Friday, you know, the possibility of, you know, that sort of, well, this game means this, and then Rovers can go and win it, and their game's on the box or whatever. But it is over. It is funny you mentioned, like, Derry, they probably still have something to play for, but they're actually a bit off it, and they have a game then against Dundalk, which is a back match next week. That Derry could look at it and say, if they win their next two games, they're right back in it. It just so happens the two games are Rovers away and Dundalk at home. That 1995 title race, yeah, Dundalk won the league with 59 points, goal difference plus 16. Derry second, 58 points, goal difference plus 15. And Shells were third, 57 points plus 13. So yeah, if Shells had won, they could have, with goal difference, they could have won the league. So there's three teams.
I wonder where your Walkman is now. Some skip near Dundalk.
Oh, well, it? I mean, it's 1995. I'd imagine it's probably, like, what happens?
Biodegradable, probably
it's
not.
It's probably just over the years. It's just disintegrated away to nothing.
I like me.
It was thrown away to Ben. Yeah. I mean, you're in the pub, son. You were still coming back from the 1995.
When you think about it, though, like, it was a regular thing. Kids went to the pub to watch the Premier League. Most of us didn't have Sky.
Three teams went down that year. Sorry, John. You're right, the most of them, Sky. I just got distracted by the league table. I very rudely. Three teams went down. I mean, it was a one to a playoff. Sorry.
Mm.
But yeah. Could you, Galway United were ninth that year. Just stayed up, just above Athlone, who I think went to a playoff and played Finn Harps, and it might have gone to penalties. Because I think that was played before the FAI Cup final the following week, which I think Derry, after a hangover, they had to somehow get up for the cup final the following week. But I think they were playing Shells, and they might have. Did they win it? They did win it, I think. Yeah, so there we go. Let's roll back through the years.
Let's talk about something that's still up for grabs, which is the first division. And I, sadly, unbeknownst to a lot of people, this has been an unbelievably good first division campaign, albeit abridged. And it's been, like, just every week there's been a pretty mad result. I think the last three rounds of games, all the away teams have won, which is completely mad. But Bray Wanderers have been the outstanding team, and they are within somewhat touching distance of winning the league. So we got Gary Cronin in, their manager. Yeah, so we were going to get the best-looking manager in the first division, but Tim Clancy wouldn't come on, so we have Gary Cronin instead in the house. Gary Cronin, what's the story?
Oh, you've already started that now, have you? Good. How about yourself?
Good. Yeah. Well, Tim's a bit skittish for coming on when the Drogs went top of the table, but it didn't last very long, so we'll hopefully get Tim on before the season is out. But you are in a situation now where basically 5 points clear, albeit with a game more played, two games to go. Haven't lost a game in a long, long time, apart from that Drogs game. And you're in a very good position at the top of the first division.
Yeah. Is there a question in that?
It wasn't really a question in it. Welcome to the show, Gary. You know, welcome to the show. It was just more of a statement.
Who was there?
It was more of a statement. It's just Johnny sort of says some stuff, and if you find a question in there, you can ask one. You know, you can answer one.
I suppose fair play to you for coming on.
We know Johnny a long time now. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Look, I was thinking about it yesterday, actually, going, I don't mind having a chat and so on. It's two games to go, and look, well, I've said it all along. We haven't got too big for the boots in that respect. It's been a fantastic run that the players have got themselves on, and we're in a superb position, obviously, in relation to ourselves, Drogheda going for the league. And I think it's too far to stretch now for Longford with the goal difference and so on. But the players have been fantastic, Johnny, and I can only compliment them, to the highest. We've just simply got ourselves into a position where we have a great opportunity, and that's all it is. And I've been there before. I've been in last day situations in the fourth division, won the league with Drogheda, actually won the league as an assistant coach to Cuzzo at Longford. And and now hopefully, we have a great opportunity to do it at Bray, but that's all it is. And we'll take the, we can't control the results, but we'll take the next two games as they come and do our best to try and win them. Obviously, it's in our own hands, but look, we'll just take the next game as it comes.
Did you feel under any, you know, not even pressure to start season, but it's just the run you've been on? Because you, from what I recall, you only started kind of okay. Cabin Teely were flying high. Was it just a case of that team kind of, you know, gelling and whatever? You brought in some new players as well, and it's just taken off, really.
Yeah, when you go back to the first game of the season, now it's a weekend of football that probably should have been called off throughout the whole league. It was a monsoon of a weekend, and that was the first weekend for the first division. I think Galway and Athlone were called off. We were in Cabin Teely, and you know the consensus where the game should have been off. But that doesn't matter. It was played the same for both teams. And I went into that halftime team talk against Cabin Teely 4-0 down. And I thought to myself, you know, what am I in for here? And you know, I remember saying to the lads, we can see another goal, I'm out here.
Really, yeah.
I felt that way. Now, maybe I had the confidence that the weather was so bad that it would be difficult for Cabin Teely to get into a half, let alone score a goal, because that's how difficult we found it in the first half. But, you know, it just felt, Jesus Christ, if we could see another couple of goals here, you're talking 6 and 7. And that would have been difficult for me personally and for everybody. But look, you know, I was confident in the lads. I wasn't doing a lack of effort. We were poor when the goals went in, but the conditions were so bad it was hard to point the finger at anybody. But it was the same for both teams. And we scored 2 goals in the second half and lost that game 4-2. And then obviously we played Wexford, and then the pandemic hit. The Longford game was called off due to weather. And then obviously everything changed for every club then, obviously, because we had a gap of 3 months. Since we've got back, we've changed a few things. We've added a couple of players and we've had a tight squad. Teams do have tight squads. So we've had to manage our training loads and so on accordingly. And look, we've gone on a great run. And, you know, it's credit to the players and the staff that I'm working with, you know. So that's all it is at the moment, though, lads. We've 2 more games to go. See what it takes us.
You mentioned Brian Maher there. You have the most clean sheets in the first division. And how important has he been in that regard?
Look, when it comes to defending, it's everybody. We always say that we defend in a situation on set pieces where we have everybody back, so everybody has a defined role. And you know, the back four being outstanding. You know, bar the Cabin Teely, obviously conceded 12 goals, and 4 of those goals were the Cabin Teely back we're in, and we had conceded 3 at when we lost 3-1 up there. After that, you're looking at it, I think we've only conceded in games after that. And it's been fantastic. But Brian's role alone has been fair to him. He made the decision to leave Pat's mutually, which was a massive decision, obviously, because he was obviously coming down to ourselves. But he wasn't playing there, so he'd done that for the best of his career. And I think that's been a real mature decision at the time, and it's been a decision that's worked out for him so far, because he's played a lot of first-team football, and he's pulled off some outstanding. I mean, just 1 or 2 saves in particular, when we were only 1-0 at home, we ended up winning that game 3-0, but we aimed to 1-1, and obviously it's a different picture then. So, but he's a competent lad, he's a modest kid as well, and he's been fantastic for us. You know, whoever he plays for, he special performances, and he got his call up when he won recently, which was a reward for him. So he's on a radar on the international level still. So I was delighted for him when he got that call. But again, it justifies his decision to leave St. Pat's and come play first team football with us. But he's been fantastic.
The Rovers game last week, Gary, I was looking at it before, and Rovers weren't playing last weekend at sort of senior level, and I was thinking, this could be now.
Yeah.
Oh, this is all set up for something. And you're looking at the team sheet, and you see Sean Kavanagh's there, and I assume you get the team sheet an hour and a half before the game or something, and what are you thinking? You're thinking, this is different than the Rovers last week.
Yeah, we obviously, when you saw the fixtures there probably a month or so ago, you saw first team up in Finn Harps on the same day. You know, that you'll have a younger type team playing against you. But look, we sort of anticipated what the side might be. We weren't too far off when there was no senior game, and I was chatting to Tony Cousins a couple of weeks ago, and they'd no 19th game either. So it was literally the only sort of senior game that Rovers had that weekend. So we can't control what type of team they put out. But then obviously we saw the team sheet, we anticipated. Yeah, Sean Kavanagh hasn't played, and of course it was a good opportunity for him to play. And we've had Dean Williams with us last year in the last third of our season, on loan from Rovers, and we know what Dean can do. and he was obviously playing, and Thomas Aluro came back in from being on the fringes with the team. And Brandon Kavanagh is obviously a very good player, but there was other good players there. Young Darren Nugent is a very good player, and we knew it was going to be a tough game. And to be honest with you, I felt a little bit before that game, the manager has his own time, the lads are out warming up and saying, this is, you know, that could go against us if we don't show up. And it's a 3 o'clock afternoon kick up. It's different preparation for the lads. But I was confident in what the lads, you know, you understand what's at stake. So it was, well, you had the game down, were you?
No, I wasn't at that one, no. I was at Rovers the previous week when I got to UCD when they'd been pretty poor. So then I saw the team sheet. It was like, this is going to be a different... Because they even had Leon in goals and just... It was
like a stronger team. And Leon was in goals as well. And the reason I was asking you at the game, because if you watch that first half, we played Rovers. Rovers played some really, really good football, and we were trying to contain them. And we were doing well, and they created a couple of half chances. And going in at half time, this was, you know, it was on a sort of an eye badge type of thing. You know, it could go either way at this stage, you know, depending on how we come out in the second half. But look, we were excellent again, similar to the UCD game the week before. It was even Stevens at half time, and we came out with a real mature and professional performance, particularly without the ball in the second half. And look, we took our chances. We young Darrell Lynch scored a similar goal to, again from a set piece, from a Dylan Barnett set piece, which has been a team. And Derek Daly took his goal. Our second goal was 5 minutes ago. He took his goal really well. It was a good move. Paul Keegan started, actually. So, look, overall, I was delighted. I had that feeling in the stomach game. You know, that was a game where I'm sure others were looking at us going, he could drop points here. But, look, come here. It was a fantastic 3 points.
Just overall, Bray is a club now. Because, obviously, a couple of years back, Bray were probably a crisis club, describing Wicklow was the North Korea of Ireland in statements. Yeah. And it was a sort of a crazy, crazy old time. And I just know working the beat, like Bray were a bit of a basket case. Whereas now it seems that things have really calmed down. The link with obviously the academy seems pretty strong. You've had Andrew Moran and Lee Kavanagh come in and then go. You mentioned Dara there. Mm. Like the production line there, like how encouraged are you by what's actually happening, both in terms of the overall club, also feeding into your job as a senior manager?
Yeah, it's very encouraging, to be perfectly honest with you. And you go back to the time when I came in as manager, and there was a changeover obviously of ownership, and Niall O'Driscoll came in and you know, spent a lot of money to clear off the previous debts and so on, and sort of gave the club a clean slate. But that was sort of a honeymoon period. There was a lot of work to do then thereafter, you know, to get the football right and so on. And it's encouraging now to see the likes of those young players coming through. They played first team football, and two of the lads have made a step over to England. And there's an opportunity for more to do that. But what I will give, you know, Bray, and obviously there was an affiliation with St. Joseph Boys before, is that they do have a very, very good record of young players making a step over to the UK. You know, the numbers are quite high, quite higher than a lot of other clubs, which can be quite surprising. But there's obviously Will Clark being the academy director there for many years, there's a lot of stability there. And I think it's quite similar to St. Kevin's Boys, where they have a director of football there who has the connections and the relationships over in the UK and have structures in place. And Will has done a fantastic job as the academy director over many years. So it's good to have that stability there. It's a good foundation to have. And obviously now we wanted to change the image of the football club, particularly from a first team level, when the changeover came. And, you know, it's still a work in progress. You know, we still have to really, you know, we know what we sort of want to do, but you need to make sure you have the resources to do it, you know. And we're still very much on the journey, or we're in the process. And, you know, obviously, the next few weeks will define where we're going to be next season. And that's a big thing, obviously, for the first team to see where you're going to be at and what we can do, obviously, over the next coming years. But to answer the question, Dan, yeah, it's really encouraging, obviously, when you see young players come through. Like, you look at Dara Lynch, obviously, this season, when he scored those two goals on his first start for ourselves in August there, he was touching the 17 birdie, but he was still only 16 years of age. And he was obviously straight into men's football, and he's done fantastically well, and he has 6 goals, and that's obviously a really you know, a good news story from a Bray Wanderers point of view. And you know, but I'd be the type of man, be other managers obviously as well. You know, you're not afraid obviously to, if the lads are, you know, strong enough physically and you know, obviously the mental part of it, you don't expect them to know the game inside out at such a young age, but you know, be willing to give them a chance and see how they perform at a first team level. And sometimes it happens for young lads, and sometimes it takes an extra year or two for others. You know, you still get late developers, and you can't ignore that. But it looks good for the club at the moment. You know, but there's a lot of work to be done, and you know, we're enjoying it as we go. But there's opportunities there for young players at our football club.
Just being at the Galway game there last season, there was a real feeling. There was a good vibe in the ground that night, and I suppose you must be regretting the fact that, you know, with the situation, because I think Bray would have really, they would get good crowds this season. There'd be a good kind of feeling behind, and even just the fact that they were flirting with leaving the Carlisle grounds, and you're still in that iconic ground, and I think there'd be a good vibe if they could have gone and supported you to the top of the table, obviously.
Yeah. Was that the evening that, I think you were there, Johnny, the president was there.
That's right, yeah, we were both there. It was notable.
Yeah. You were the most important person there, obviously, and then the president came there in after you.
It was typical story of Galway United under Alan Murphy. Played well and lost.
Yeah, look, that particular night was fantastic for us. We came from behind. That was the first time last year we came from behind, but the atmosphere was great that evening. Actually, it was a nice summer's evening, and you miss the crowd. You do miss the crowd. You really, really do. And we're not the only club, but we do have a nice little ground there in Bray. I'm delighted that Bray Wanderers didn't move out of there prior to me coming in there, because it's fond memories in the Carlisle grounds. I just think it's a really, really good football ground, and I'd rather develop that ground than move somewhere else. Unless it was for the greater good, for whatever reason that might be. But look, Amir, it's a ground that obviously has much better atmosphere with people there and the crowds. And hopefully, I can't see it this season now, Johnny, but hopefully now, come next season, you know, we can get people back in the gates. Like, you know, you mentioned Alan Murphy there. I want to actually mention Alan myself, actually, since you mentioned him. And, you know, the common team played well and got beat. And, you know, Alan is obviously, he's a couple of years older than me, but he's obviously a legend down in Galway, and he put a good squad together this year, and it's evident obviously John's come in and done something different with it, but it's the squad he put together, and I just think he's worth a mention. He's been unlucky, really unlucky. I think he was gasping that force win to get him going. It didn't come in time for him, but really, really good fella, as you well know. And sorry for him to lose the job, but that's football, isn't it?
Just on that, because the, you know, Dara Doyle, Tim Clancy, yourself, obviously Alan Murphy and others as well, even going into that loan and Wexford managers, a lot of young managers in the league. But I do respect the fact that you came on the show, because you're playing Galway United and that loan away in your last two games, and Galway United is going to be a very tough game the way they're playing at the moment, and you're not over the line yet, so you're just kind of trying to keep a lid on expectation, I guess.
Not over the look. It's. I haven't even mentioned about being over the line or saying nothing's done yet, because that's not what it's about. We just have an opportunity to win it. I think, like I said at the start, I think it's a far stretch for Longford now at this stage with the goal difference. But I think obviously ourselves and Drogheda are the two teams that can win it now. And that's all it is. It's a battle till the end, and we our feet are on the ground, and anything can happen. Like you say, our next game will be Galway at home. And they're fighting tooth and nail for the points to make those playoffs. And they actually played Drogheda before that in their refix game as well. So it's going to go right down to the wire, I'd imagine. But, you know, we can only focus on ourselves, Johnny. And that's what we have done over the last couple of months. We can't control what, you know, obviously what happened to the Galway squad with the virus in the squad. We can't control that. We can't control what side, as Dan mentioned, what side Shamrock Rovers 2 put out. We can't control, obviously, the refix game with Drogheda and Galway. All I can do is watch that and hope Galway do them. You know? That's all I can hope for. But we can only control what's within our own group. And that's what we continue to do to the end. And regardless of what happens, I can see it going right down to the wire. But regardless, we'll be, you know, we always have the integrity of the league there. Like, we have to go out and try and win the game against Galway for the integrity of competition. And also against that loan, but it's going to go right down to the wire.
Thanks a million for coming on, Gary. Hopefully, be back at the Belinda Carlisle grounds next season with a full crowd there, and maybe you'll be in the Premier Division.
Yeah, we look forward to that. All right, look, and regardless where we be, we hope the crowds go back in. And look, I think it's the 27th of October now. the last round of games on a Tuesday night, which is a bit unfortunate that's midweek, but we'll see exactly where we are then. We could have to play more football if it ends up in playoffs, but we'll do our best to try and win it.
Top man.
Cheers, guys.
Look after yourselves.
So earlier on, we gave out Lotto Land's League of Ireland price booster. They are also boosting the Dockby Bows, both teams to score. And remember that Bows are safely through to Europe here, and Dundalk are mad to win this game. This was 1.72. It's now 2.1. That's 11 to 10. To avail of this offer, go to the price booster section of lottoland.ie/sportsbook.
Yeah, that was Gary Cronin. And yeah, we've had a couple of sort of... It's hard to keep tabs with the fixtures because of coronavirus outbreaks and so on. But Bray's next game is Galway. But prior to that, Galway actually play Drogheda in a game that was postponed because of a coronavirus.
Yeah, I'm trying to give the weekend's fixtures there, Johnny, yeah, just to clarify it.
So it's just been one of those seasons. But in terms of the weekend, it's UCD Cavintilly, which again is a very big game. Drogheda need to keep the pressure up by playing Wexford.
That's on Friday.
Friday. And then Shamrock Rovers second team play Athlone on Saturday, whilst Longford Town play Cove Ramblers in a game that, again, is still very relevant. It's going into Tuesday then, that rearranged game between Galway and Drogheda. And it was refreshing having Gary Cronin on. That question you asked about when you mentioned North Korea, I was going to ask that because just like I was thinking of if they'd left the... I love the Carlisle grounds. I have to say I think it was the first away ground I was ever at in the League of Ireland. And I love the... I just love the Georgian architecture around the ground. I love the pitch. It's a fantastic pitch.
The Leisureplex across the way. That sort of contemporary mix of a Georgian architecture and a Leisureplex.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is like, if there's anything to sum up Ireland more in the 2000s than like beautiful architecture of a different time, and then like a sort of an amenity just thrown into the middle of the mix.
Bray is a bit like that though. It's a mixture of like very, very nice and maybe not so nice, but it has the Harbour Bar then down the road is actually a place that I passed by it the night of that game I was mentioning. And
What's not so nice?
About Bray. Yeah. The middle of the town is like very rough and ready now. Like it's kind of like some of those places, maybe as you get further south from the city centre in Dublin, like they've got nice and gorgeous old houses and then kind of like just very, I don't know.
Where?
Doon Laoghaire would be a bit like that. It's kind of like the centre of Doon Laoghaire is not much going for it, is there?
No, it's probably an accurate assessment. Mm.
But it's the nicest backdrop. I haven't spent
much time there though. I feel like the People's Park is quite nice, isn't it?
It's and obviously one of the coldest grounds in the world, I think, when there was winter football, Bray. But I'm just delighted that they've I hated the situation at that club and how they'd lost so many fans, probably a lot of whom haven't really gone back because of the way the club had been run. And I think fair play to Gary, like he's steadied the ship. They didn't start the season great, as you mentioned. He was like, I might be leaving here if we concede another goal. But now it's in their own hands. Despite the fact they lost to Drogheda, they got a bit of luck with Drogheda losing at home to Athlone. So it's back in their hands. And they could be back in the Premier Division next season, Dan.
Yeah, they could be, yeah. I mean, it's very plausible. As I said, they're it's in their hands. And I don't think there's much more you can say about that. I guess at this stage, we're just hoping that... Just hoping that this season gets finished as well.
Yeah,
we're still right. I'm not to be the harbinger of doom, but the old circuit breaking lockdown chat.
The beauty of the first division is that back to Cove Ramblers in seventh, there's still the prospect of, and this is the structure of the league this season with the playoff situation. But there's right back to seventh. There's a team with something to play for, and it's still up for grabs. So it's going to be a cracking end to the season as well.
Yeah, we should mention the rest of the Premier games at the weekend, by the way, because it's the two games on Friday, as we mentioned, Cork Waterford Saturday, which we have mentioned. Then it's Shells against Sligo on Sunday, and then there's Refix games on Monday, Derry Dundalk and Finn Harps Rovers before Dundalk's Europa League game.
What about
on Thursday,
your old buddy, the Shells captain, and his little audio after the...
Oh, Gary Deegan. Yeah, when, Gary Deegan.
The man is absolutely... He's certainly passionate.
Let's listen to the brief Gary Deegan response after the Shells big win in Waterford last week.
Just another message from the skipper again. 3 points in the bag. Now see you again next week for another 3 points. Get in there!
He's pretty happy there, John, wasn't he? Pretty happy. I think Gary Deegan is the type of guy, if you're playing Astro, you know, you play Astro with someone and like five aside, whatever, and you really want to impress them if they're on your side. Mm. You don't want to be like, you don't want to be sort of strolling back, you know, no. Like you're sort of like on your edge because
I'd be afraid of them.
They have a tough enough run in shells. So to get 3 points on the board there is huge for them. It gives them that small bit of breathing room. Harps aren't playing this weekend. So even just the fact that they have 5 points. Now, well, Harps are playing on Monday against Rovers. Maybe if Harps want Rovers to win the league on Friday, enjoy some brief celebration afterwards and maybe take the eye off the ball for Harps. I mean, it's not something you'd say publicly, of course, but if privately, I'm sure they'll be thinking that way. And so it's certainly for Shells, it looks like they've got a chance. I mean, they're on 16 points. They've got 3 games to go. If they got to 19 points, would, you know, are Harps going to get to 19 points? I'm not so sure, you know. So, like, they have a real chance. One more win or even a couple of draws, you would think that they've got a chance of getting themselves out of it there. So, big for them. Yeah, big for them. Like, it's a weird time. Like, it is a weird time for everyone at the moment because I know there is definitely a lot of chat behind the scenes in the league about hoping that the league gets finished. Like, I really hope that they can get to what is now November the 8th with the season being pushed back effectively because of fixture congestion.
Yeah.
And it's primarily because of Dundalk, but I also think, to be fair, I think there's every chance that they're leaving themselves open for the prospect of any more COVID cancellations. And we see everything that's going on with our world this week, with the Irish team this week, with the case numbers generally. You would think that it's going to be hard to get through the next couple of weeks without losing another game or something. So, or two. So it's going to be tight for that. It's going to be tight for the end of season generally, but that's why every game at the moment really counts in every sense of the word, just in case. Just in case we end up having to settle the league by sort of unusual means.
Yeah, and just news coming through that Football Association of Ireland Appeal Committee have found Wexford in breach from fielding an ineligible player in 4 First Division games. Committee found Wexford in breach in the following games: Athlone, Wexford, Shamrock Rovers and Cove. The committee basically ruled that Wexford will forfeit all those games 3-0. So that's a development that's come through. And
so we have an updated league table now off the back of that. So basically what that means, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think have Cabin Teely picked up a couple of extra points now off the back of it because they drew with them. So it's definitely changed the picture of the... Yeah, it has. So basically what's happened now, that it was Bray 35, Drogheda 30, Longford 29, UCD 26, Cabin Teely 26. What you have now, there's a new revised table posted and it's, Bray 35, Drogheda 30, Longford 29, Cabin Teely 28, UCD 26. So Cabo have gained 2 points today and all of a sudden in that race for... Well, it's that race for fourth and fifth, realistically. They have benefited there, and as a consequence, I guess, I mean, Galway probably are not happy with
no.
It's made Galway's task a bit tougher.
Thanks for that, Dan, and enjoy the rest of this wacky week, I guess.
Yeah, we will have next week. I suppose we'll have a Europa League game, which, you know, could be in Belfast,
Transnistria,
Pala, Transnistria, like wherever, like, because of course we must remember that it is the Dundalk owner Peak's world and the rest of us are all just living in it. So
it won't have gone unnoticed as well that Karabegs, their old historic town, is now a war zone. Nagorno-Karabakh.
Brings us back in time. Yeah, it is. I'm sorry, I'm kicking back to this. I mean, the Bill Hultsizer interviews, everyone just throws out stuff. I mean, going to war in the IRFU, slating Tala, then talking about as well the concept of playing Linfield. Are playing in Windsor Park, but talking about, well, you know, there's a logic in it in Arsenal, you know, bringing a team from the UK to the UK. Yeah. And you're thinking, they're not really reading the room here in Dundalk.
Yeah, not reading the room.
It's not necessarily the place where you would go and start talking about, well, it's nice to be here in Dundalk today, but I'm thinking of popping up to the United Kingdom.
In Newry.
Thinking of popping up to the UK, up to Newry, you know, and up different country up there, you know. It's not like, like I just wonder where the sense comes from that they're not fully in tune to their area. You just wonder where that might be coming from.
But you just wonder, wouldn't you?
We'll be hearing more from Bill soon, I'm sure. I think the interview express is it hasn't stopped off at the station. It keeps moving. So we will have more. Who needs brave statements when we've got Bill? You know. So
let's just send him the bill.
Well, let's just see where it goes from here. So, yeah, we could have league winners crowned by the time we come back next week, and amongst other things, I suppose. It's a big round of games.
Thanks to our sponsors, Lottoland, where you can dream big for your Euro Millions in Irish Lotto betting. Check out the top SSE Airtricity League and European qualifier markets at lottoland.ie/sportsbook. And that was season 4, episode 24. But there are